episode of Purple Insider. We continue Games Week here on the show with Ben Gessling from the Star Tribune to return to play a classic Purple Insider podcast game. We look into Mike Zimmer's crystal ball, although it is no longer Mike Zimmer's. Now it is ours. It belongs to us, the crystal ball now, Ben. What is up?
He didn't pass that thing on to Kevin O'Connell?
No, I don't think so. He left it behind like a memento for us to be able to use anytime.
Now that we're in possession of it, we know that it did not get to Kevin O'Connell. I'm just a little surprised that it didn't, given how much good it did for him over the years.
We also don't need it now because I think the new coach will just tell us what's going on with someone's injury.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think everything will be on the up and up from here on out. I see no reason to need it, but we'll keep it around just in case there's a point at which we have to look into it to divine something that's happening.
Okay, the way that it works with the crystal ball game is basically I ask you to look into your crystal ball and we talk about things that are going to happen in the future, and usually I go right beforehand. So let's talk about the immediate future, and then we'll push our way out as it becomes foggier and foggier in the crystal ball. So let's talk about next week in the draft. Here's what I want to know from you. Not just who they're going to pick, because everyone thinks they're going to pick Derek Stingley.
Right. Yep.
Everyone. Eric Smith from Vikings.com was walking around asking all the reporters, and everyone but me said Derek Stingley Jr. I went with Chris Olave just to be different.
Was it really? I mean, I figured there would be at least one other corner. Was it all just Stingley other than you?
Trent McDuffie was one pick, okay. I think. Okay.
But still in the same family.
Yeah. Yeah. So look into the crystal ball, though, and tell me, like, oh, look, Ben, wow, you're surprised. You can't believe what you're seeing in the crystal ball. What would be a surprise at this point?
So I'm looking into the crystal ball.
And you're shocked.
I'm shocked.
I can't believe it.
I'm seeing a quarterback picked at number 12 or perhaps number 16 if they are able to trade down and still find one there. I'm seeing Kwesi Adofo-Mensah coming to the podium saying, we like this guy. We see value at the position. Something about how positional value helped us make this choice, and it's never a bad time to invest in the quarterback position. I see questions flowing shortly after Kwesi Adofo-Mensah talks about the pick of what does this mean for Kirk Cousins. I see think pieces being offered. I see talk radio thanking the football gods for this gift that will get them through May and June and July. That's the wild scenario the crystal ball is making apparent for me at this moment.
So here's what I think. If they are to pick a quarterback, there's only two scenarios that I could think where that could really happen. One is if Malik Willis does not get picked,
yeah,
and is there at 12 and they think that there's something really there with him, specifically,
yep,
him. As the most high upside quarterback and the one that you could sit behind Cousins for a year, potentially even 2 years if you wanted to, for him to develop. But the one that I think is more realistic is actually the Teddy Bridgewater, like the trade back into the back end of the first.
Yep.
Because think about where they were in 2014. Like, there were some similarities there where the roster had a lot of holes, where almost anyone they would have picked at, was it ninth overall?
Yeah, I think they were eight, and they traded back to nine to get Anthony Parr.
Wherever they would have picked, whatever position,
yeah,
you everyone would have gone like, oh,
yeah, that's fine.
Good pick.
Yeah.
And then they decide to trade back in and take Teddy Bridgewater to be their future quarterback and then sit him for that entire first year. I think that's not unrealistic because of the caliber of quarterbacks are kind of similar to a Teddy Bridgewater, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're not these megastar physical freaks, but they all have something that is likable about them.
Yeah, I think that's certainly defensible, in part because as you do it, and this is the reason Rex Spielman did it in 2014, you get the fifth-year option, which is another year of cost control at a position where it's gotten increasingly expensive to try to field a competent starter. I mean, we're at the point now where the Cousins deal is kind of the going rate for a quarterback that has any kind of equity in the league. So if you can find a guy at the end of the first round and sit him for a couple of years, you still have three where it's cheap. And I think it's certainly defensible investment to make. The question about how they get back into the first round would be the one that I would wonder, just because they don't have a ton of draft capital to do it. But if you tried that approach, I think you certainly could say, hey, this makes some sense, and we're going to take a swing at this and see how it works.
So I want you to, because the crystal ball doesn't always show exact clarity.
Yeah.
But maybe sometimes it ranks things for possibilities.
Yeah.
So inside of the crystal ball, like where...
It's a quirky crystal ball.
I know. It's, yeah, it's, I call it dynamic because it always changes the time. Yeah. Like where...
Much like its previous owner.
Where does that... Yeah. Fickle. It's a fickle crystal ball. Where does it rank, though? That the quarterback scenario where they end up, whether it's back into the first, second round, 12th overall pick, of all the scenarios, the possibilities for positions they come away with after night one, like where does that rank for the crystal ball or you?
I would not put it higher than like fourth. I mean, I kind of led with that because it would be interesting. I think there's a possibility of that, but... I mean, I'd go like beyond corner, I'd say receiver is in play. I would say edge rusher. You could still make a case for that. It's a draft with plenty of them, so you could say let's wait on that. I could see you're probably not taking an interior offensive lineman night one unless you're, we've seen it before, but I don't think we're going to see it with this group. So I'd put it somewhere in that range where it's not at the top of the list, maybe not even in the top three. But I think if you talked yourself into something where you saw value and you said, we can use this to bridge our way to the future and find a way to have this position not cost us as much and we could build the rest of the roster around that, I think you could talk yourself into doing something like that. I think corner is the obvious. They still need somebody to play there. And if Derek Stingley's there, I think they'd like him. And I think that would be the guy. But if he's not, then maybe you think about, okay, do we trade back? Is there another way to go? What do we do at this point? That's going to be the interesting thing with this draft is that it's the same scouts, but we don't have a 15-year track record on how this front office operates like we did with Rick Spielman. We couldn't look back and say, well, in 2008, he did this. So.
Right. Right.
It is a little bit more fun to try to figure out what they're going to do because it's probably a little bit more variance as to how it could go.
And it became very predictable with Spielman.
Yeah, there was some of that.
In the way that when they needed something,
yes,
we knew kind of who they'd have to be able to target at that spot.
Yep.
So even with Christian Darrisaw, I think most of us were shouting out Christian Darrisaw's name last year. And then, you know, they did a good job to trade down and get him, save for the Mac Jones part of that. But... trading down and still landing a prospect who, you know, could come in and help them right away was a good pick, but drafting for the desperate immediate need was something that just sort of became synonymous with every single year with Spielman.
Yeah.
And with this, it's almost like that all the needs are kind of desperate immediate needs and long-term needs. But I wonder if like what you think they could do differently aside from the quarterback position that would make us go, oh, okay, now I see where Kwesi and the new crew is different. Like, now I see it, because so far there hasn't been a lot of seeing it.
Well, and that's the question, is how much is the new front office being able to do what it wants, and how much are they operating with a bit of a set of rules, a menu, so to speak, of, hey, we need this team to be competitive, so do what you want to get there, but you have to be in position to compete for a playoff spot this year. I mean, that's kind of the great unknown, because we don't hear from the Wilfs a lot. And when we do, it's not always somebody telling us exactly what they are going to plan to do. So, which is not uncommon among NFL owners, but we don't get a lot of that. So there is that question in terms of how much autonomy does Kwesi Adofo-Mensah have to operate this draft the way he wants. That said, if it is different, I think it will be the types of players they won't take. I don't think you'd see them use pick 19 on a center. I don't think you would see them probably take running backs as high as the Vikings have done in the past. I don't think you'd see them use pick 9 on a linebacker that's not going to be a pass rusher. I mean, that's going to be a different story now. It would be like using a pick 9 on a defensive end that you're not looking for more than 6 or 7 sacks a year from. Something like that, I don't expect you're going to see them do that. I think if you believe they are going to look at this differently, if you believe analytics such that we want to use that word, is going to have a say in the process, I think that's where you'll see it. It won't be the guys that, oh, hey, we see something that nobody else does, and we're going to spend big at this position because it fits us so well. I think that would probably be where you'd see the change.
Yeah, and I do think that in general, it is hard to separate yourself as a drafting team because there's only so many things you can do.
And everybody misses picks.
Everyone misses picks. Everyone's got the analytics now.
Yeah. So
everyone knows how to take the combine numbers and compare them historically.
Right.
Rick Spielman giving a full lecture on how they clone players. We're like, Rick, okay. I mean, everyone does this now. Like, there's websites, dude.
Yep.
Like, mockdraftable.com, the PFF, you know, draft guide. Like, they have all of this information right there of,
right,
you know, who these guys' physical profiles look like. This is not...
They thought they were cloning Michael Irvin in 2016.
Ooh, yeah. And Daniil many, many a times with Daniil. But here's... I want to go... You know, usually the crystal ball only goes forward, not back in time. But let's say that you had your crystal ball available to you when Kwesi Adofo-Mensah took over and you looked in it. Would you have seen it going this way with this offseason? Because now you had the crystal ball and not me, but I truly would not have. And it is taken...
In terms of it being this much run it back?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, it's taken me a while to kind of just sort through all of this.
Yeah.
And like, the position they've put themselves in does not seem very favorable for this year or for the long term. And that's kind of hard to discuss because, like, you want it to be interesting and you want to talk about, well, they could do this and they could do that. And then they did the same. And Kwesi Adofo-Mensah said kind of like the best thing was to do nothing. And you're like, was it? And I guess I wonder how much you thought at the beginning, because we haven't talked on the show about this, that it was going to go this way.
Well, I think the fact that it did, I have to think, has something to do with the directive they got from up top. I mean, that thing Mark Wilf said about we expect to be super competitive, you know, you kind of figure at the time, okay, everybody says that. Everybody's saying we want to compete for a Super Bowl every year because nobody wants to come out to the fans and be like, guys, 4 wins max. I mean, that's what we're looking for. Nobody's going to come out and say that. But if you look at the Wilfs' history, they have not been terribly interested in the long rebuild. The only time they've ever really done it is when they had to, when the roster literally had collapsed along with the Metrodome roof in 2010, and you had to go find young players. But even after that, a year or two into that, they're going back and signing guys like Greg Jennings, and they're making moves to try to win right away. So they have not wanted the long rebuilds. I think the only scenario where you would have seen this happening is one where they are saying, we have to do this. I do know there was at least a brief discussion about what happens if we hit the detonate button and blow everything up, trade Cousins, and then kind of go from there. I think that would have been the first of several moves to come out of that. But I think in the end, could we have seen it coming? I think the only way you do is if you figure this has to be somebody telling them we want to operate this way and do it how you want, but this is where we expect to be.
Okay, so let's say it's status quo for the draft. Let's say they take, you know, corner, edge rusher, whatever it might be. Someone who will play but will not change your fate.
Yeah.
You know, we many times are told, well, this guy fills this immediate need. And then, like in Christian Darrisaw's case, plays half the season and he's okay. Like, usually just that guy is not Justin Jefferson very often. But how much do you think... Or does the crystal ball think I'm trying to be intentionally obnoxious?
Sure,
to be funny, just don't email me. But how much do you think it's different? Because every person that we've heard out here, because we're inside TCO Performance Center, just having gone through more press conferences where offensive players say, "Oh yeah, we've been watching the Rams, folks, and here it comes." I guess I wonder how much different you think, or the crystal ball thinks, things will be under Kevin O'Connell than they were Mike Zimmer.
In terms of the offensive performance or the approach?
I think just everything. I mean, how much of a different football team will they be than what they have been over the last 4 years when so much is similar?
Yeah, well, let's consult the crystal ball here. Let's take a look inside it again. I'm seeing slight differences, but I'm seeing a 3rd and 8, and I'm seeing Cousins back to pass, and there is a check down to the running back, and it's 4th and 2, and now they're deciding whether to go for it because they're right around midfield, or they're deciding to punt. but I don't see a ton of spread everything out. I don't think it's going to look all that different. Because there's two things. Number one, this is not like a drastic change in the offense. There's going to be some different terminology. There's going to be some different personnel probably, but this offense is a cousin of what they have been doing, pardon the pun. But they also have talked about, we have heavier personnel. We want to use some of those things with this roster the way it's currently constructed. And maybe the theory here is, let's play this out for a year. It's not that expensive to say, let's explore the theory that the coaching was really what was holding us back. And before we just blow everything up and throw everybody out, let's take one more year to make sure. I can get down with that theory if that's where they're going. But I also think that as they're currently set up, it's not going to be that different, because you don't sit there and look at a great third receiver there yet, or, you know, some kind of gadget player that you can move all over the field. Maybe they get that guy. Maybe it is Chris Olave. That would change a lot of things. But I think the way they're currently set up, you're betting on Kevin O'Connell getting through to Kirk Cousins in a way that Mike Zimmer could not, and that flips the switch. It's hard to sit here in April with a guy that's been in the league for 10 years and say, look out, there's a corner that he's about to turn, and you're never going to see anything like it. I think that's hard to assume that that's going to happen until you see it. So right now, I would look in there and not see a ton of changes.
Folks, Minnesota sports teams are in the playoffs. Yes, that's right. Playoffs. Minnesota sports teams is happening. And for all your Minnesota sports inspired gear, go to sodastick.com. That's SOTASTICK.com. They have hockey, basketball, all sorts of great designs on hoodies, on shirts, on hats, everything you need. Go there, use the promo code PURPLEINSIDER for 15% off your purchase. Again, that is SodaStick, SOTASTICK.com, 15% off with the promo code PURPLEINSIDER. You know that meme that's like, change my mind?
Yeah. Yeah.
What could change your mind? Like, what could we see before or at the very beginning of the season?
Yeah.
Let's say that. How about through week four? Because anything that happens after that, who knows? But from training camp through the first quarter of the season, what could happen that would change your mind from saying, I don't think it's going to be that different?
I think it would be first couple of weeks of the season, you're seeing Cousins make tough throws, slinging into traffic, saying, and then coming out after the game saying, hey, you know, Justin Jefferson, if you give him a chance, he's going to win a lot of those contested catches. I just wanted to give him a chance to make a play. And we're talking to him at a podium about some of those types of throws. If he's doing that, if they're spreading things out more, if there are I certainly think there will be fewer second and long runs, just because, yes, I don't know that there could be more in a logically defensible position in the NFL in 2022. But I think if you see Cousins come out and play the way that they clearly are banking on him playing, where he's playing more freely, he's playing with more confidence because he thinks this coach has his back, as opposed to the last one, who quite certainly did not, that would probably change my mind. But again, it's how much of that is in him and how much of it is just not there, where you're not going to have a new coach pull that out. And maybe that's the theory. Maybe this is a little bit of a science experiment where you take the control and you don't want to change too many variables because you get a better result that way. So maybe the one variable we're changing here is the coach, and then you see if that works. And if not, then you blow the whole thing up.
Well, there's another thing to be said of, like, what is different? Is 11 wins different?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it is, because the last 2 years they're playing meaningless football on the final game of the year and they get two of their wins. So what do they got? 15 in the last 2 years? And
that
two
matter?
Two of them are, 15 total.
13 that
13
matter.
In games, yes, that matter out of what? 31 games or so?
33.
Yeah. So
it's not very good.
No, it's not. Right. You know where I might think of it? Is, and this might be a weird thing to say, but I've always believed that we can walk out of a training camp and totally understand where the season is going, save for crazy injuries, dome collapses, everything else.
Lawsuits involving your star running back.
I mean, there's
criminal allegations.
So many ways you could go with this. Certain boats.
Yeah.
Vibes, though. Like, I really think that if they went into the early part of the season with completely different vibes as a team, how much they were playing together, how much they were playing for their coach. I mean, the last 4 years, 2018 in camp, all of us said, this isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And I remember all the national reporters coming in being like, oh, you guys got a Super Bowl squad here. And we're like, no.
You know, Sports Illustrated had the big let's follow the Vikings around as right? they rise with the new practice facility, new quarterback. They had to run that story in the last week of the season because they might not make the playoffs.
Right, right. And so, you know, I think that even early on, if you get a sense, because last year the vaccination stuff really got ugly fast.
Yeah, it was a bad vibe.
Right. And I mean, and then think about like 2019, their best season. By week four, their receiver is saying there's truth to all rumors that he doesn't want to be here.
Yep.
So I think that vibes actually do matter here.
Yeah, I would agree. And it certainly seems like the Vikings think that, because all the stuff we've heard about culture and all we've heard about changing the atmosphere around here, I think is in response to what they either knew was a problem, or I think what ownership found out was a problem, or at least found out the extent of how much it was a problem when they met with players on January 10th. I think when they sat down that day and heard directly from players about all of the things that players had gone through, it was like, oh boy, this was worse than we expected it was. So I think some of that talk is probably for the public, but some of that is also, I think, a message to players about, hey, this is going to be different. We hear you. We understand what needed to change. And there certainly seems to be a bet that the vibe is something you can change and have it result in different results. 11 wins, yeah, I think that makes a difference. The question I think that creates that may be problematic is if you look at that and say, boy, we're one step away. Let's go all in and keep with what we have. And then maybe that's not sustainable. Maybe it's not the type of thing that's going to happen if the schedule's tougher, if you don't get the injury luck. We've certainly seen that in the past. But if they get to 11, yeah, that is a different thing than they've been in the last few years, and especially in the NFC where things look fairly wide open.
The tough part of this, too, is that Kevin O'Connell could nail all this stuff. He was talking about his game management dude today, and for the first time ever, a coach stood in front of us that since I've been here and sounded like he understood how to manage a football game, like clock and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he'll be great at it. I'm just saying he sounded like it.
Like the headset stuff. And
right.
Like, let's plan ahead so that it's not just sheer chaos 20 seconds before we have to call something.
Yeah, imagine. But it might still go sideways. I don't know. But you mentioned the injuries, but also the age of a lot of the core players.
Yeah.
It's just relevant. It becomes, the minute you put a 3 in front of your age, it becomes very relevant. Yep. And so, you know, you could have guys who last year played very well who don't play as well this year, and you could do all these things right. You could get all the vibes right. You could play all the music. You could put up a basketball hoop, and you could have everybody pulling in the same direction, but you still end up with 8 wins.
Yeah.
Because the things that went right that we didn't talk about as much last year don't go right again. Injuries was a big part of that they actually didn't lose that much in terms of injuries in comparison to a lot of other teams. So, you know,
the
I think
team that beat them by 5 games in the division, among others.
Right. The Packers were way more injured. Yeah. David Bakhtiari, Jair Alexander, like those are major players.
Za'Darius Smith.
So, right. Za'Darius Smith. Those are 3 of their best players. And, you know, the quarterback, of course, ultimately determines that. But I guess that keeps coming to mind for me. Like, how will we judge them if we feel like they did a lot of the right things from a coaching perspective with Kevin O'Connell, but the results still kind of came out the same? I think we have to look at it in a nuanced way and say, for the long term, this is actually better, but you were put in a position with your roster where it couldn't actually be better.
Well, and I wonder if that's ultimately the case that Kwesi Adofo-Mensah and Kevin O'Connell are planning to make, hoping to make is probably strong, but if they go 8-9 again, I would think the case you go to ownership then to make is, okay, we tried it. We have a lot of guys in their 30s. We can't continue to just have Rob Brzezinski go out and do cap gymnastics every March and try to move money around and change a few things on the roster and keep running it back with these same guys. We have to do the hard reboot because we've continued to try this incremental stuff and it hasn't worked. So I do wonder if somewhere in the backs of their minds, they wouldn't be terribly heartbroken if that happened, just because you could say, okay, we humored the idea. We tried it. It didn't work. Now we're telling you this has to change because you believe in our culture. You believe in what we're doing. You seem thrilled with the hires you made, and that's how they've talked, and those things can change very quickly in the NFL. But if that is still the premise that they're going in with is, hey, we did all the right things. We've changed the culture. We've got a good coaching staff. We've got a more progressive way of managing player injuries, all that kind of stuff, and the results are still not there. I would think the case they'd go in and try to make then is we've done everything we can do on the fringes of this. Now we have to get down to the foundation of it and change it.
Right. And if it totally blows up, then they get a high draft pick and a good quarterback draft class.
So yeah, that changes things quickly too.
There is that part of it. It's almost like from Kevin O'Connell's perspective, he in a way can't lose, because if he wins a little bit more than Zimmer, you're a genius.
Yep.
If he wins the same, then he did the right things, but things probably went wrong with the roster. And if it totally blows up, I mean, let's just say there's a quarterback injury or whatever.
Yeah.
Then you're drafting high and setting yourself up for the future. It's just that fans are put in a position who want them to win this year to really hope that it was Mike Zimmer's fault, and mostly Mike Zimmer's fault.
Yes. Yeah, and not so much even Rick Spielman's fault, because a lot of the people that they have, well, not completely. I mean, guys like Anthony Barr are not here, although that was probably Mike Zimmer putting his thumb on that scale quite a bit too. But so there are some guys like that that are gone. But a lot of the things that you saw Rick Spielman do that didn't work haven't changed that much. So, yeah, you are hoping pretty hard that it was Mike Zimmer's fault if you're hoping this team wins this year. And fans don't like to go through rebuilds, even if ultimately it's the right thing, even if ultimately getting a quarterback that's cheap and is 22 and is under your control for 5 years on a rookie contract is the best way to get to contender status fairly quickly. It's not fun to go through that. So I get that, but yes, I think if they get to that spot, it is not the worst thing in the world for Kevin O'Connell to say, well, hey, we tried it, and now it's time for me to go get a quarterback that I can mold and have be my guy.
Folks, just wanted to mention that you can get the Purple Insider Draft Guide next Monday by going to purpleinsider.com anytime. Click on any of the articles to go subscribe to our newsletter. The Draft Guide comes with 1 month subscription, and you can get all of our written draft coverage. Go to purpleinsider.com. Check out all of our written work there. Sign up for either a full year at a reduced price or 1 month. You get the draft guide that has 50 players the Vikings could draft, special essays on this year's draft and what the Vikings can learn from the past, and much, much more. Again, purpleinsider.com. Our draft guide comes free with 1 month subscription. Go check it out today. And by the way, before I ask you the next crystal ball question, saw a little factoid today that the Vikings are spending the fifth most amount of cap space on the quarterback position of any team in the NFL, wow, including more than the Green Bay Packers for this next year. And that, I think that really crystallizes it. Like, when we talk about the contract and all that stuff, it's not just, he's kind of highly paid. It's like, no, you literally are paying more money to your quarterback situation, even with a cheap backup, than almost everyone else in the entire league for the way that you've structured things. And that's just how much harder it ends up being because of that, which leads to my next question, which is, if you look inside your crystal ball, how long is Kirk Cousins the quarterback of the Vikings?
I think, let me take a look at it here. We're through the 2022 season. He's had another statistically good year, but not quite made the leap. They are looking to draft the next guy, and it's starting to kick around all sorts of questions about, would he want to be the bridge for a year, or would they move on from him with his consent because he has no trade clause? I'm seeing a lot of, I'm looking on, there's a lot of tweets March about possible trade destinations for Kirk Cousins, because they're looking to take a quarterback high in the draft, and maybe there's a place for him to go that's not here. I think if it goes that way, I think you're looking at trying to make a move next year. Now, some of that is in his hands, as he talked about last week, and if he plays well enough, then maybe it's longer term. I just don't think that if you are fully committed to him for the rest of his career, as he talked about, that you're putting void years in a deal. Putting void years in a deal because you're expecting to be done with it, and because you needed to structure his contract in a way that helped you cap-wise this year. That is really the thing with him that has made this so difficult. I mean, it's worked brilliantly for him. It's worked brilliantly for Mike McCartney, his agent. They have done these short-term deals with all sorts of guaranteed money that you see a lot of quarterbacks do, 6 years, with half of it guaranteed, but that allows teams to move things around, and they have some leverage. They have some ability to massage the thing the way they want it. Cousins has said, no, I want two-year deals. I want three-year deals, but I want you to guarantee every dime of it. And twice he's gotten no trade clauses. If you match up the three deals he's had with the ones that one quarterback signs one time, he's come out financially better off.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's been a masterstroke of how they've structured these things, but it does make it difficult for the Vikings because they don't have a lot of maneuverability with the way those contracts are laid out.
One thing I wonder about for the idea of trading him next year isn't just that he agrees to it, which he might if you say there's no more money here. So
yeah.
Like there's money somewhere else.
Yeah.
But this next draft class is being talked about as being really good.
Yeah.
Now, there's no guarantees there, but if there's six first-round quarterbacks or five first-round quarterbacks, is a QB needy team saying, no, I want to trade for a Cousins? And if they're trading him, that means they didn't win this year.
Yeah.
So it's like you didn't go to the NFC Championship or the Super Bowl. So do we, other franchise X, want to do that?
Yeah.
Now, there is always desperation, but that just makes you wonder, is that something that another team wants to do when there's supposedly going to be all these other quarterbacks available?
Yeah, it is hard to paint him as the missing piece when he has been cast as that here. If we are through 5 years and it hasn't worked, I think it's hard to make that case. So maybe in that case, he is here for one more year and you let the kid that they draft sit. The other question there is, if he's the starting quarterback, they're probably not going to bottom out. I mean, they're probably going to be in that 15, 16, probably picking between 15 and 23, 22, like that. So
the huge.
Yeah, the huge. And the huge does not get you the quarterback at the top of the draft class, which means you need to get draft capital to move up. And you don't have a lot of it at the moment. So I wonder if some of the things you'll see them do, if they make trades where they trade back in the draft and they end up acquiring picks in 2023, keep an eye on that because that could be setting up for we want maneuverability for a quarterback draft next year.
Okay, real quick, and then I have quick trivia for you.
All right.
You know I prepared something.
Yes.
Somebody asked in the Friday mailbag the other day where you would put an over-under for when the Vikings win a Super Bowl. And so I put it at 13 and a half years, like within the next 13 and a half years, would you bet the over under? Where would you set it and would you bet mine? Or which way would you bet mine?
I would set it at, I think something in there is fair for the over under. I don't think it's, I might set it a little. It depends if they get the quarterback right. I mean, I would maybe set it a little sooner than that if they get the quarterback right. But yeah, I mean, playing probability, they're probably not going to get the quarterback right, or at least to the degree that wins you a Super Bowl. So yeah, I think that's probably a fair number. Would I bet the over or the under on that?
I think historically you have to bet the over.
Historically you bet the over.
The reason I like it,
the over
though,
is never.
The reason I like it, though, is like, never is a long time.
Yeah.
But also because like once a decade they get a shot.
Yep.
And so you're betting on, I'm giving him like a decade and a half.
Yeah.
To get maybe two shots in there and maybe they win one is the way that I look at it. But I mean, you're right. If you get the quarterback situation correct, or it was Mike Zimmer who was holding back Kirk to some incredible extent. I mean, it can happen before that. I just think that I tried to put it where the most pessimistic fans would be like, are you crazy? And the most optimistic fans would be like, are you crazy? But for different reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good place to set an over under in general. You get action on both sides.
Okay. So here's your trivia. There have been 20 first overall quarterbacks taken since 1990.
Okay.
20 first overall quarterbacks.
Oh boy.
Two of the bottom six in winning percentage played for the Minnesota Vikings. They weren't drafted by the Minnesota Vikings, but they did play for them. Can you name the bottom six out of those 20 in win percentage?
So
First
overall quarterback. So yes. Not a first overall pick. First overall quarterback.
No,
taken.
First overall pick.
Okay.
Sorry, first overall pick quarterback.
Okay. So, but not, doesn't have to be first overall pick in the draft.
Yeah. So put it this, no, it does.
Okay.
Okay.
So we've drafted like Peyton Manning.
Yes. Correct. He's number one for best winning
correct.
Percentage,
yes.
as you might guess. So I'll just give you the worst, which is Trevor Lawrence as of this time.
Okay. Yeah.
3-14.
Yep.
So the next five in terms of worst winning percentages for guys who are the first overall pick and our quarterbacks.
Okay. Let's see here. Since 1990.
Since 1990.
Jeff George.
Jeff George is correct. Yes.
That would be one that's played for the Vikings.
46 and 78.
Okay. I would assume David Carr.
David Carr is right. 23 and 56. He has the second worst record.
Tim Couch.
Tim Couch is right on.
Yeah.
He has the Jeff George had the So Lawrence has the worst as of right now. Carr is third. George is fourth. Couch is fifth. So who is sixth?
That played for the Vikings.
Played for the
Vikings.
I'm
missing somebody. That was the number one overall pick.
I would say you don't need to look deep back into your crystal ball for this one. Too far. You're trying too hard.
I'm sure I am. It's not Donovan McNabb. He didn't go number one. He was like number two.
People are screaming at you because you're trying way too hard. Because you're trying to use your 90s brain.
Yeah.
Or your early 2000s brain.
I totally am.
Think much sooner. Think of like, I'm here.
Number one overall pick. Why am I screwing this up? I'm sorry to all of the listeners. I mean, Josh Freeman, that's too far back, and he wasn't the number one overall pick.
Yeah. We got yelled at by Mike Zimmer about this guy.
Okay. Sam Bradford.
Sam Bradford.
Yeah, I forgot. Yes. That whole year was.
Yeah, that was wild.
He was a number. He was the guy that was like the last one to cash in before all the,
correct.
CBA changes.
Okay. And you're missing one more widely considered the greatest bust in NFL draft history.
Well, Ryan Leaf, but he wasn't the number one pick.
Okay. Second biggest bust.
Biggest bust
quarterback who ever went number one.
Let's see here.
Threw a ball 90 yards from his knees or whatever.
Yeah.
Mel Kiper said that this guy absolutely can't miss. He's going to be one of the best players ever.
Todd Marinovich.
No.
Well, he was a big bust,
too. More weighty.
More weighty.
Larger.
Yeah,
Purple drank.
Oh, gosh.
Why you get Jeff George and Tim Couch, but you don't get Jamarcus Russell.
Oh, of course. Yes. 280 pounds. I was thinking of the Kentucky. You got me thinking fat guys. You got me thinking of the Kentucky guy.
Yes. Yeah.
But yes, Jamarcus Russell.
Lorenzen was the guy
who
was coming to mind for you. Yes. Peyton Manning has the best ever. And then what's funny is in terms of win percentage, Alex Smith and Jared Goff over the last 20 years are in the top five, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I suppose they're all kind of like, you know, just over 500. There's probably a lot of those types in there.
Yeah, a lot of Eli Manning was like 20 games over 500 halfway through his career and then finished 500 because it was an atrocity.
Yeah, with two rings.
Carson
weird
Palmer
career.
Had the Bengals thing. Yeah.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Anyway, well. Ben, great to get together again, as always.
Thanks for stretching me on the trivia. It's always fun to go down memory lane with a crappy quarterback.
I would say it's clear that you haven't really been working out in the offseason.
Yeah, I put on a few pounds and trying to work it off this time of year.
Okay, well, thanks for coming by, as always, and this was really fun. And we will do it again in the offseason and look more after the draft at some point into your crystal ball.
I look forward to it.
Football.